Good morning, everyone.
Great, well, that's a big deal.
My name is Henry, and I actually had no choice about my name. My parents gave me that name. I come from a very backward country, England, and in England, the parents always give the name. I think probably in America it's different and the children get to choose their own name, but in England we have to deal with being given a name. And I actually didn't like the name Henry when I was growing up. There's a famous King of England who was very fat and had many wives. That when you're a schoolboy, that's the associations that people have. But actually the abbreviation was worse. People used to abbreviate my name to Hen. And Hen is a female chicken. So this was terribly embarrassing at school, being named after a female chicken. Does anyone remember the movie Back to the Future? So there were three movies, and repeatedly in these movies, the main character would be called Chicken. And he would always respond by saying, "Nobody calls me Chicken." So, as you can imagine, the sort of associations of hen and chicken in the playground, this was not a good name to have. So, I was rather hoping that my nickname would have been something more like... but unfortunately, no one in the playground gave me the name The Rock. So, this morning I want to look at the question of which name would you prefer? Would you prefer to be known by... as a chicken, or would you prefer to be known as a rock? So I've kind of called it, yeah, the rock versus the chicken. Apparently this is a famous mountain somewhere. Everest, is it? And this is an animal which can be called a chicken. So I'm using the gender neutral language of chicken, rather than calling it a cockerel or a rooster or a cock. I'm going to call it chicken because a hen and a cockerel can both be a chicken. So the story I want to look at is Mark 14. And this is the story of Peter's denial of Christ. So just for the sake of the story then, your Bibles may say something other than chicken, but I'm going to use chicken. And your Bibles may also say Peter. But I'm not actually going to call him Peter during the story, because Peter wasn't actually the name that his parents gave him. The name that his parents gave him was Simon. But Jesus gave him the name Peter. And the name Peter means the rock. So, if you start Mark 14, 26 to 31, this section is Jesus predicts that all his disciples are going to abandon him. And Simon the Rock says, "No way, I'm not going to abandon you." And Jesus says, "Actually, you're going to deny me three times before a chicken crows twice." Then we skip forward in the story to 43 to 49. Jesus is arrested and a fight breaks out. The Rock, as you would imagine, draws his sword, starts fighting, cuts off someone's ear, and Jesus tells him to put away his sword, to stop fighting. So, at this point, everyone runs away. And Peter really seems to be the only one who's sticking around. If we skip forward to verse 54, we will find Peter has actually followed, or Simon the Rock, has followed Jesus all the way to where he's been taken. This is an artist's impression of the place he's been taken. So this is supposedly the palace of Caiaphas. So maybe Peter's somewhere around this sort of front area. So what I wanted to get across is that this is actually quite a dangerous environment for Peter to be in. He's warming his hands, and there are the guards of the high priest around. So next slide, show you maybe what the guards look like. So these are Israeli soldiers which is kind of the modern equivalent of what the gods were like. These are people who remember he's just cut one of their ears off. So it's unlikely that they're that friendly towards him. So then if we go forward to verse 66 to 72, which is the main bit we'll be looking at. So then the high priest slave girl comes up to him.
Yeah, so this is the high priest slave girl.
She actually is quite a threatening person to Peter. And she asks him this question. You are also with that Nazarene Jesus. And he denies it. And then the chicken crows once. And then this same slave girl starts going around telling the other people, this man was one of them. And Jesus, Peter, Simon the Rock, denies it. Then some of the bystanders start recognizing his accent and say, surely you are one of them because you're a Galilean. And the Rock says, I don't know this man, I don't know what you're talking about. Chicken crows again. And at that point, Simon the Rock starts crying. It's not a very impressive ending for the Rock. Here he is in tears. So my first question really is this fair, actually? Is this a fair picture of what happened? If I was Peter, I would say, I haven't denied Jesus at all. I have followed Jesus right into the danger area. And what I was doing was either not really untrue, the things that I was saying, or they were completely necessary.
So the first defense, the first defense is actually what Peter was saying was honest.
So the question he's asked is about whether he was with this Nazarene Jesus. But the woman doesn't specify when he was with Jesus. If I was Peter's lawyer, or if I was trying to defend myself, I would say, how can I understand what you were talking about? You didn't say, yesterday. You just said, you gave an unspecified time period. How can I possibly understand what you're talking about? Or I'd say, Jesus is a very common name. It could be anyone. I mean, how can I understand who you're referring to? And then also she calls him a Nazarene, but Jesus wasn't born in Nazareth. He wasn't from that family line. So, maybe she's talking about someone else. So I would make sure I have not denied Jesus at this point. The second one is a bit more clear-cut. Maybe he says, I don't know this man at all. So perhaps you'd say, he really is lying there. But I think I would have said, no, this lie is completely necessary. This is an incredibly dangerous situation. And in order to protect Jesus, follow Jesus, I need to lie. So I would have been convinced at this moment that I hadn't done anything wrong at all. And then this hero of the story arrives, which is the chicken. And the chicken crows. And the chicken's crowing does something to Peter. He no longer is clinging to these self-defenses, but suddenly he starts crying. I found sort of in preparing this talk that I became very aware of both the defenses that Peter might take in my own life. Firstly, in a way that I avoid truth. So I think there might be a picture of G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah, brilliant.
So G.K. Chesterton points out that there's a big difference actually between telling the truth and not lying. And people can be very, very good at not lying, but that doesn't mean actually that they're telling the truth. And I realize this particularly when people ask me, what job do you do? So from the very first job that I've ever had, I've always avoided the truth. My first job was in finance. And I thought working in finance sounds so boring. So perhaps I can make it sound a bit more interesting. So I used to say, I gamble other people's money in stock market. So I thought that sounded much better. And then I left finance and I went to work with IJN, the Central Trafficking Organization. So that was a charity. And I thought, working for a charity doesn't sound good at all. So I would say, either I work for a kind of law firm for the poor, something like that, or I would say, I used to work in finance. So suddenly I was quite keen to work in finance compared to working for a charity. And then this summer I was back in England, having left the IJN, left that job in charity, and wasn't able to find a job, and I started working for my church. And when people ask me what I did, I would say, I used to work for IJM, this great charity. Because I thought working for a church is even more embarrassing, especially a church which is run by my father. But if I tell people that I work for a church run by my father, they will think I am incompetent and unemployable. But I would never actually be lying, but I would be editing the truth in order to present a particular picture of myself. And then I also realized that there are times where I've felt like it's been necessary to lie. And I think actually necessary lies are almost more dangerous for Christians and organizations which are doing good, because the mission seems so important. And so it becomes quite easy to justify our lives. The story which came back to me, which I'd completely forgotten, was when I was at school, I had quite bad spots. I was not popular, not muscular. Sort of quite a loner probably at school. And one person came up to me and said, oh, I saw someone who looks like you, a girl who looks like you. Do you have a sister? And I thought my sister is very beautiful. She doesn't look anything like me. I have spots and I'm ugly. So I thought the only thing I can do is lie. So I said, no, I don't have a sister. But it's amazing how happy I was to do that, actually, because I felt it was necessary. So what's so interesting to me is why doesn't Simon the Rock use those defenses? Why does he cry? And I think what I've realized actually is that pressure to present yourself as a rock when you fail, actually it's not enjoyable at all. It's not a great way to live. It's like when you're incredibly dirty and sweaty. You can either say, no, I'm clean, and carry on like that, and try and persuade everyone that you don't need a shower, or you can admit the fact that you actually need to be cleansed. And I think at that moment, Peter suddenly realized, yeah, I actually need to be cleansed. And that is an incredible relief. I think the next slide maybe is the Paul Simon song, I'm a Rock. I don't know how familiar you are with that song, but the lyrics of that song, I think, are an incredibly powerful picture of what it's like to live life trying to be a rock. He talks about sort of the isolation, loneliness. I touch no one and no one touches me. I'm a rock, I'm an island. That actually living life as a rock is not all that fun. So I think this is the first victory of the chicken over the rock. The chicken, Peter, Simon the rock, Peter is defeated by this chicken. I think it's interesting that Jesus said, "You will deny me three times before a chicken crows twice." Why didn't he just say, "You'll deny me three times before tomorrow morning," or "You'll deny me three times over an extended period of time over the next week"? Why did he name this animal that was going to indicate to Peter that something happened? And I think the thing is, so often we're so caught up in our own defenses of ourselves, so caught up in trying to present ourselves as the rock, that we need something to break us out of that. And perhaps a chicken crowing is something which can do that. So I've been trying to think about what are the ways that I can build that into my life. Things that remind me of the words of Jesus. The chicken crowing reminded Peter of Jesus' words. So how can we put in our lives things which remind us of Jesus' words? So this is the first sort of extraordinary victory of the chicken. The second way in which I want to look at the chicken and the rock is to step back a bit and look at the question of who is the greatest. So this is a picture of St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican City. Peter and the other disciples were often having this discussion about who's the greatest. And I think Peter would have loved to just pull this out of his wallet and say, "This is the church that is going to be built, named after me." I mean, it's incredible. You know, and Thaddeus, what churches do you have named after you? I think during those discussions, he would have loved to say, Jesus called me the rock. He would have produced all those arguments. And the disciples were continually having this debate about who's the greatest. Even at the Last Supper, they're still debating it. Despite the fact that Jesus each time says, the first will be last, the one who wants to be great must serve, still they don't get it at all. They still have this idea of becoming great. So I think what happened when Peter headed off to Caiaphas' palace, he was still out to prove that he was the greatest. This was, in fact, an incredible opportunity. Everyone else had run, apart from maybe John. But all the other disciples had abandoned Jesus. So here, Peter is going to prove he really is the rock. He is the greatest. So I feel like this story that's come into Mark's gospel seems to be unfair. Maybe it was made up, but maybe it was told by one of the other disciples in order to make Peter look bad. But they were in this competition to see who was going to be the greatest. So perhaps Thaddeus sort of said, you know what Peter did. He was awful last night. And this somehow, got into Mark's gospel. So I thought, let's look at who's the source, really, of this story. Because Mark's gospel is the first gospel, and the first gospel to be written. There's no reason, really, for this story to get out if it didn't go into Mark's gospel. But the strange thing is that Mark's gospel has probably just one source, and that source is Peter. So it seems like Peter was the one who told this story. In fact, it was Peter who preached on Peter's denial. This an amazing thing that Peter, why didn't he emphasize the risks involved in going there? Why didn't he emphasize how brave he was being there? Instead, he tells a story about him running away crying. So perhaps you'll say to me, but I know the reason Peter told you this story. He told you this story to show how great he later became. It's fine to say, you know, I did this really bad thing, but now I'm amazing. If you look in Luke's story of Jesus, you have the whole account of Acts, which follows Luke, in which Luke tells us about the amazing things that Peter did. If you look in John's Gospel, you have this amazing reconciliation scene between Peter and Jesus. But if you look in Mark's Gospel, there's nothing. When Peter tells his own story, he doesn't tell us anything of his reconciliation, anything of the great things that he does. In fact, he doesn't even give his name to the Gospel. The Gospel is called Mark's Gospel. Why is it not called Peter's Gospel? The other disciples called it after themselves. I think Peter has finally understood what it means to be great. And what it means to be great, I think, is to end your Gospel where Peter ends his Gospel. Peter ends his Gospel with the empty tomb. It seems, actually, to us it often seems so abrupt. The story just kind of cuts off with the empty tomb. Why, you know, it's quite an unsatisfactory ending. Why don't we see, you know, what did Jesus do after that? But I think Peter realized that this is the most important moment in the whole of history. This moment of the resurrection is the biggest event of the world. Why would you end your Gospel anywhere else? And I think when I think of our stories, telling people about our lives, I tend to focus the story around myself, whether it's for good or bad. But I think the extraordinary thing about Peter was that he was able to tell his story with it ending with the empty tomb, with it ending with resurrection. So if you go to the next slide, please. So if this church was a lot older, maybe 1,000 years or more older, it might well have one of these on top of them. This is a chicken. And there are thousands of churches around the world which have one of these on top. In fact, one of the popes in the first millennium said every church that's built has to have one of these on top of them. And another pope said that the emblem of Christianity is the chicken, because the emblem of Peter is the chicken. It seems extraordinary that the emblem of Christianity should be the chicken. The rock seems like a much, much better emblem. Surely everyone would like to have a rock on top of their church. That would look much better. A chicken is a terrible idea. You know, who's going to want to come into a building with a chicken on top? But nearly all the old St. Peter's in Rome had a chicken on top. Westminster Abbey, which used to be called St. Peter's Abbey in London, on the Bayeux Tapestry, which is in the 11th century sort of depiction of battle, there's a picture of this chicken being put on top of Westminster Abbey. The chicken is actually the emblem of the Christian.
I feel like I don't know how to achieve that kind of things in my life. I am so focused on my own greatness, my own success in life. And my failures are not things which I really want people to know about. I would rather edit them out or give a slightly different picture of the world. But what I wonder is whether if I can really grasp in my life that this moment of the empty tomb as being the most important thing in my story, then perhaps it can start to produce real greatness.